Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
You know, I love this song by Beck. Which takes us north of the border to Canada, where right now the FIFA Women's World Cup is going on. Before we get to our next guest here, just a quick reminder. Our next guest brought to you by Bud Light. And soccer fans, you know you have the opportunity here in Houston. Get out to stadiums. Enough with just watching it on TV, but get out to stadiums. You got the CONCACAF Gold Cup here on July 11th. You've got Mexico-Honduras the first week of July at Energy Stadium. And Bud Light reminds you to get over to HoustonDynamo.com. Also get your season tickets to the Dynamo and the Houston Dash. Bud Light reminds you to get down to BBVA Compass Stadium and follow the international game. Bud Light, the official beer of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate over the many years that they have supported my ventures on the radio and these shows and brought soccer on the airwaves to you. With that, we go to Canada and former Canadian international. Christine Latham has been doing a wonderful job covering the Women's World Cup. I had the pleasure of calling four games with her. She's been on panels. She's been doing it all. Christine, how are you?
Glenn, how are you?
I'm doing good. I know you're still doing good because I've been watching you on the post-game shows, and it's exciting times up in Canada, huh?
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, everybody's been so great. I mean, working with you was such a pleasure. You made everything so easy. You know, I was newer to this, so working with you was just awesome. I had a great time, and I'm still having a great time up here as Canada continues to win. So,
yeah, let's talk about Canada, because I really loved how refreshing you were talking about the Canadian national team and not saying everything was roses and wine. They continue to advance, but they get some real healthy criticism by the Canadian press as well and others because of the way they're playing.
Well, I think that they, you know, definitely haven't played their best soccer, you know, this whole tournament. You know, we talked about how they were lucky to get out of their group, you know, and they were, you know, that group was very close with ties and losses. It was very close, and Canada wasn't playing well, you know, but they made it out of their group on top, and they're continuing. I didn't even think they played their best soccer against Switzerland, except the only difference was they capitalized on their opportunity in front of the net, and they ended up winning 1-0. So I would consider this run for them very, very lucky so far.
Christine Latham joining us. By the way, back in 2003, Christine was a high-scoring striker for Canada, their best ever finish in a World Cup. Got to the semifinals, and she was a big part of that team. She played her collegiate soccer at Nebraska. All right, so which takes me to John Herdman. And I heard your comments that, you know, not everything was perfect and certain players were wondering about lineups and things. Early on, you and I had a discussion about the platform and the pressure and all the media attention that he was getting, and it just seemed like a kind of a strange dynamic. It was almost like, you know, he was the leader of a giant group here and was trying to sell us almost too hard, to the point where it looked like he was pushing the envelope in a way that maybe they were less than confident.
You know what? I agree with that, Glenn. I think that coming in, you know, a lot of the players talked about how they were the most prepared team, hands down, compared to all the other teams under John Herdman, and how, you know, they had the ability to be very flexible and adaptable in all types of game situations through their training and motivation through him. And it seems like none of that has really held true. I feel like it's been the opposite. You know, the pressure has gotten them. They don't look like the most prepared team. They haven't been able to adapt to situations, most notably being ahead of goal in that Netherlands game. You know, bringing on some questionable subs, and then ended up tying that game when they had the lead in the last 15 minutes. So I don't think they've been the most flexible or the most adaptable or the most prepared. So it's interesting to kind of see and listen to him, you know, throughout the tournament, kind of, you know, build everybody up and his team and his nation. And then now it's kind of more of a sense of relief that he's advanced, you know, out of the group and now into the quarterfinals. And he verbalized that after the game. You know, you would think our team's won the World Cup, you know, when they just won the game because they haven't been playing good. And he knew that it was a possibility they could lose.
Yeah, so Canada, boy, I'll tell you, this is an interesting tournament. I've loved the press coverage up in Canada. Now I'm going to take you to the U.S., and there may be some similarities here between the two teams. What I see is something really healthy going on with the United States, and that is here in this country and through the media and everything, and I know we have to be careful to be too critical, but I consider it very healthy that people here in the United States are, despite the fact that the U.S. is winning, just like Canada, and advancing and navigating the tournament, which I'm not taking anything away from anybody for doing that because it is all about navigation. But they're getting criticism because of their playing style, and I think that's incredibly healthy because now it's not just about winning for fans of the United States. They want to see better soccer.
Well, I agree because I think with the U.S. team, they've always kind of been that team that always gets results, always beats teams by healthy margins. And this is kind of really the first tournament where you kind of see, you know, several weaknesses maybe in their game, their playing styles, even in player personnel, you know, like their leader, Abby Wambach, who's not necessarily having the best tournament, missed a penalty kick and a very important penalty kick at that in the game versus Colombia the other day. So you're kind of seeing some things you haven't normally seen with this U.S. team, and they're kind of having to battle this criticism that might have not always had to be as being kind of this magical team that always wins medals and gets results. But the World Cup for the U.S. team, people forget, is always their, like, Achilles heel. They've never won a World Cup since 1999, you know. They've always struggled in World Cups, you know, to earn that, you know, coveted title. So it's interesting now to kind of see them, you know, in that – criticism that they're receiving, how they're deflecting it in. And again, they are advancing, you know, so even though they're not playing their best soccer, they are advancing and they're still going through with one or two goals a game, one goal a game.
I was real interested when Jill Ellis was interviewed last night. And again, we're not taking shots here at anybody, but, you know, when she comes out and says she's fully, you know, really, really satisfied with this, I get it from the results standpoint, but I don't know how she can be satisfied. And I think she brought criticism upon herself because she said that.
Well, and if you look at the U.S. team, I mean, they have such depth. They have such an array of players that she could be playing if things aren't working. And she hasn't necessarily done that. You know, she hasn't necessarily used this plethora of bench players, you know, kind of like we thought she would, Glenn, during this tournament. She's made maybe one or two changes here. Now she's going to have to make changes with Megan Rapinoe and Lauren Holiday out, obviously with their two yellows, which equals a red. They have to sit. So now she's having to bring different player personnel in. But it's been interesting because even though they haven't been playing their best, she's kind of stuck with the same core group when she has a plenty of options that are just as qualified sitting on the bench.
It's been pretty amazing, though, just the amount of discussion over this, the investment that Fox has made here on this Women's World Cup. I think it's spectacular. As someone who's played in it before in 2003, this must look like night and day to you. And you must say to yourself, wow, this is really amazing, the depth and the investment that is made on promoting this tournament and the women's game.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is unbelievable how, you know, all of the 52 matches are covered, you know, by Fox, including, you know, tons of extras that they're doing, which is features on players and pre and post game interviews and all kinds of little tidbits along the way that keep everybody in this country and worldwide motivated and into this tournament. And they are, you know, lots of stadiums have been sold out, you know, during this the first 2 weeks of group play, which is amazing and not as common, you know, in Canada for games. So it's been so amazing to see Fox's dedication to just promoting the women's game and promoting this fantastic tournament that only happens once every 4 years. They've really laid everything on the line, and it's completely different than 2003, which I don't know if we were even streamed live on the internet. So.
Yeah, what? You know, it's all the advancement of the game, and it's spectacular. She's Christine Latham, played for Canada, played at the University of Nebraska, was an excellent striker. All right, China and the U.S. China, to me, has grown in this tournament. I think pretty sound defensively. I think they're going to be difficult to break down. And I think in their last two games, we've seen more from them from an attacking perspective and creating chances.
Well, you're exactly right. I think, you know, my own personal opinion is they're the best defensive team in this tournament. I think they've executed their defensive strategy, you know, to a T, you know, and they've been unlucky to lose, you know, even that first game versus Canada when they got that late, you know, penalty kick in the 92nd minute. However, you see them each game kind of gaining confidence in their attack and them capitalizing on their opportunities when they do. So each game you see China, they have such a great defensive structure. And then as soon as they break out, they're starting to send more numbers forward. They're scoring goals. And they're really making a lot of teams have to rethink their strategy on breaking them down in their defensive third because they are so tactically sound there right now.
Okay, which leads me to the U.S. They haven't really created, I don't know if they've created enough during the run of play in this tournament. I think the real shining stars for the U.S. is their back four. I think they've been exceptional. But, you know, how does the U.S. break China down? Because their wide game has been so-so.
Well, you know, I was up until this point, I would tell you that I think more of the dynamic play needs to come from the middle, runs out of the middle, more movement off the ball, not so kind of just get the ball, put it out wide. I felt like Lauren Holiday, when she is going forward and she is taking risks going forward, it's hard to judge or read those runs as a defense. And there's more numbers coming through. They have to pick up and make decisions. Now she's out. So depending on who she puts in there, I think more runs need to come from those central positions. Even if they come centrally and go out wide and the players out wide come in, I think more movement off the ball and different types of runs is what breaks down China's good defensive shape in that area. But they've all been scouted now, the U.S. team, for just playing wide and going forward. So they have to create different runs from different parts of the field, most notably centrally, if they want to break down China's ability to pull them out of positions and then get in behind them.
Likely Morgan Bryan, who plays here in Houston for the Houston Dash, could be in the starting lineup. Christine, excellent to talk to you. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I know you're a busy woman up there. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Glenn. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Great having you on the show, and say hello to that little girl of yours. She's one of the cutest. That was Christine Latham joining us from Canada. Look, Morgan Bryan is likely going to get the start for the U.S. Huge moment for her alongside Carly Lloyd in midfield. Now, they played a lot of games together, but China is not going to be easy. The other semifinal? Well, would you have wanted Germany and France? Because that's who's in the other semi. I still think the Germans buy a goal over for the French. England will take on Canada, the host nation, and then Australia is waiting on the game tonight, which is, I believe, Japan and the Netherlands currently going on right now. 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776 is the number to call in. Right now, I've got a pair of Gold Cup tickets down at BBVA Compass Stadium. It's Group B. It's a doubleheader. Jamaica, Canada, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Saturday, July 11th at 5:30 p.m. Seventh caller at 713-780-3776. You get a pair of tickets to the CONCACAF Gold Cup at BBVA Compass Stadium.
Yeah, I was alive. ESPN. 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
Always a great guest to have on this show, and of course many of you in Houston know him. He is Jeff Cameron of the U.S. National Team and Stoke City. Jeff joins us now. I think you're somewhere on the East Coast, Jeff. That's just my lucky guess, hopefully.
Hey, Glenn. Yeah, man. I'm back home for another week or so before I head back to England. So actually, we just got hit with a tornado warning, but it just went past us, so we're all right.
Any opportunity to eat some of that good New England seafood, which I know you covet?
every day, lobster, Little Megs, oysters, clams, everything, man. I got to stock up on that before I head back to England.
And it must be nice for you just to have an opportunity to kind of just shut out the game as much as you possibly can, see your family, and really kind of re-energize the batteries.
Yeah, I mean, it's been almost 4 or 5 years now that I've actually had a full off season where I can shut the body down. I mean, this is the first time I haven't done anything in about 2.5 weeks. I mean, not run, not work out. And then the last week and a half, I've 2 weeks, I've been working out, doing three sessions a week of doing fitness, and the other 2 days were in the gym working out. So I'm getting back into my preseason mode and fitness to be in shape for preseason.
Yeah, isn't this is kind of the first phase for you, is making sure you got a good base of fitness before you go into actually your preseason?
Yeah, I mean, when you're training and playing for 10, 11 months of the year, basically we have an off-season program that's just kind of not like crazy hard fitness. It's just kind of to keep your body ticking over, keep your legs ticking over, so you don't lose too much, but you also get the full rest that you what you need. So it's just about maintaining your fitness. I mean, and making sure that your body's able to heal and recover from a long season.
He's Jeff Cameron joining us here. And before we get into a couple of the real interesting pieces around you right now with the national team and, of course, your new Stoke contract, I just want to ask you, how important during the regular season, when there is so much stress, there is so much volume of games, there is travel, how important is it for you to be able to say no to things, to social engagements, so that you make sure that, you know, you bank the rest that you need to deal with all the things you deal with on a weekend?
I mean, it happens on a regular basis. I mean, I'll go out to dinner maybe once, twice a week. Most of the time I'm cooking at home because I enjoy cooking. It's like my hobby. But then there's other times when the guys are going out, or, you know, everybody's going out for a function after. You know, you can only do that so often. I mean, maybe I probably go out maybe once a month with the guys or do stuff like that, just because the schedule's so hard, and recovery is the most important thing, and that's just making sure you're taking care of your body, you're resting right, you're sleeping well, and you're eating all the right food. So that's, for me, that's the most important thing I have. You know, you can wait until after your career to drink and do whatever you want, but for me, it's just about maximizing your opportunity and taking advantage of your career. You know, I want to maximize as many years as I can, and doing all those right things on a regular basis will only help me prolong my career.
I got to think you've seen some guys come and go that haven't been able to figure that side of it out, that were talented.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that come in and you know, they enjoy the lifestyle, or they enjoy the, you know, the type of fame for a little bit, but then it ends up going to bars and clubs and all that kind of stuff, and then you see them kind of fizzle out. And the best piece of advice that I ever got was when I was in my first year at Houston, and Dominic Kinnear and John Spencer said, you know, we believe in you. We think you have a long career ahead of you, and if you stay focused and you take care of your things off the field, you're going to have a very, very bright future ahead of you, and you can leave the drinking out, because and it doesn't say I don't drink. You know, I've had some drinks this summer, this offseason, because I'm enjoying myself and having a good time. But during season, it's very, very rare for me to do that, because I know my body so well, and it takes a toll on you. It takes years off your career, and that's the first advice that they gave me. They said they could have played longer if they, you know, they took care of their body better.
Yeah, what great advice from Dominic Kinnear and John Spencer. And it does seem that the modern athlete now is understanding earning potential, length of career, and really taking care of themselves like you are. All right, well, let's get to the big news. I think what most people want to try to get their arms wrapped around is, you're not with the national team in the Gold Cup. I know Stoke didn't really want you to play in this Gold Cup based on a new 3-year deal you have and want you to come in fresh. Just explain to everybody sort of what's going on there with the U.S. national team and no Gold Cup.
Yeah, the whole situation is with Stoke signing a new 3-year deal, and basically, you know, finishing the season on the 24th of May, and then you have a first game, you know, I think you have two friendlies against Germany and Holland in a way, and you want to you want to be able to play for in those games, but at the same time, you know, playing 11 months straight and having injuries for the season with a sports hernia and a few other things with my calves and some of my abdominal things that I had, they wanted me to shut the body down because I was more at risk if I kept on going and training and not getting the right amount of rest and recovery before a big season ahead. You're more likely to redo that coming in for preseason. So the fact that they asked me to kind of shut the body down a little bit to heal, let it heal and do all that kind of things, I think was, you know, it's a tough decision because I want to play with the national team. I want to represent my country, but at the same time, I can't go against my club and go from there. So it's kind of, a player's in a tough position when they're asked to do that. But I mean, I respect Stoke and my coaching staff and all that. And obviously I respect Jurgen and what he has to do and all that. So, we'll go from there.
How do you think Jurgen Klinsmann, you know, handles this? I mean, do you know? Because, you know, he sometimes keeps it close to the vest with players.
Yeah, I mean, we had a conversation, and I kind of told him, like, you know, we talked about the situation that I was in with Stoke and everything. And we just kind of talked about, I don't know, their frame of mind and kind of how I said I wanted to play. But this is kind of what's been kind of holding me back, and I was kind of in a tough position. And he respects that, and he understands that, you know, the club is the team that is you know, basically I play for them the majority of the year. So he understands that. He's been a club coach, so he has a kind of that frame of reference. So for me, I think I walked away with the conversation that we both had a good understanding and that, you know, even respect the wishes of Stoke. And, you know, I said I want to represent the national team and play as often as I can and be there. And that's the last thing I want to do is, you know, you don't want to burn bridges and be left out with the national team. But my main goal is to get back there and be with them for the qualifiers. And the way I can do that is making sure I'm healthy and fit, ready for preseason. And I have a good start of the season and I'm back in the squad in September, October.
He's Jeff Cameron joining us. Jeff, I look at you and I say, and I've said this on the program many times, outside of goalkeepers in the Premier League, you are the lone American player who's playing more minutes than anybody in arguably the greatest league in the world. So since you left Houston, where is it now that your game has progressed the most? And I have an idea that I think I know what you're going to answer, but I want to hear you answer the question. How is playing in the Premier League under Mark Hughes in these different environments, the pressure, the healthy pressure, how has this brought your game to another level? And what are the areas in that game that has really jumped up the most?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just being consistent, trying to be consistent on a regular basis. I mean, the competition every single day is unbelievable. I mean, you take a day off, another guy's behind you, and he's taking your spot for the weekend. So that's the number one, and that's being unsaid. I mean, where in the MLS, it might be a little different. If you're a big-name player, you might not have as much pressure, but you have two or three guys, just because the roster's bigger in Europe, you have two or three guys knocking on your door or knocking on, you know, right behind you because they want to play in the weekend, and they're just as good as you. So you got to make sure you're performing every single day, and that's the biggest thing is competition. And then, obviously, you're challenging yourself every single weekend playing against the best players in the world. You're playing against Van Persie. You're playing against Mata. You're playing against, you know, Drogba, Diego Costa. I mean, you're playing against Arsenal teams like that. They have world-class players, and you're challenging yourself every single weekend. And the biggest thing is every game, every second, every play matters. I mean, you see the relegation goes down to the end of the season. The relegation battle and every single point you lose a game in the beginning of the season that you should have won, that could cost you at the end of the season. Those points, those 3 points, that 1 point can cost us. And we kind of had that feeling this summer. You know, when we lost to Swansea at the end of the season away, and then we lost to Burnley in the beginning of the season because we didn't come out sharp. Those 3 or 4 points that we could have had could have put us in seventh or eighth place. So, and those are positions that we want to be in and looking up at the, you know, Europa League spot. So all that into one is it makes everything the game more intense. Your focus has got to be 100% for every single second, every single game, and it's got to be the same way in training. And that all comes down in, you know, nutrition, making sure you're eating right, you're getting the right sleep, you're preparing yourself every single day for work, and that just comes down to taking care of yourself and your mind and your health.
Jeff, what kind of statement was that when you guys beat Liverpool 6-1 and just absolutely ripped them apart?
Well, you should
there was a statement
that,
there, right?
For the next game, you know, I think our first game of the season is against Liverpool August 8th. So if we beat them 6-1 again, then it will be a big statement. But, for me, it was an amazing way to end the season on a great note. We have the most wins we've ever had at home, most points that Stoke City has ever gotten in the Premier League. We still stayed in the top 10 in the last 2 years for the first Stoke team to ever do that consistently. So we broke a lot of records this season, but we still have a lot further to go. I mean, I think Stoke City is an up-and-coming club, and I think we're going to be challenging for the Europa League spot next year for sure.
Is that the goal? I mean, when the season starts, does Mark Hughes stand in front of you and say, hey, we're trying to win the Premier League championship? Is that realistic to say that, or is it, you know, because based on the relative nature of
the money
of
and
funds
everything,
and no, everything in relation to the top four?
Is, yeah. We go through the point where, okay, we go through, like, we kind of break the season down into a couple segments. Okay, where are we going to get points? Boom, boom, boom. And kind of our goals for every month, and we kind of break it down in that section where, okay, we can maximize points here. If we keep hitting our target, we're going to stay in the top 10. We're going to stay in the shoot for the top 7. And if we play well and we do well in the Cups, the FA Cup and Capital One Cup, and everybody's healthy and everybody's, you know, producing at all cylinders, then we can create some havoc and turn some heads. So that's always been the goal in the beginning. That was our goal this season. And I think the pressure is going to be on for us even more next season because of how well we did this season.
Yeah, I mean, it was a spectacular season for you guys this year. And is Europe really a big piece of the future of this club? If you're going to, you know, to get European nights at your stadium and to play in Europe and get some of the money that comes with getting into the Europa League, that could be incredibly exciting.
Yeah, and I think that's the goal for all the players that are playing at Stoke. We want to challenge and we want to play in the best tournaments and the best competition. And when you're playing in the Premier League, you're playing against the best players and the best teams in the world. But at the same time, you want to get that little different feeling of playing, you know, traveling to Spain or traveling to wherever, and playing different environments and get that different feeling, you know. And that's one thing that I wanted to challenge myself in my career in that aspect.
Your versatility, Jeff Cameron, has been exceptional. It always has been. You pretty much can play anywhere on the field. And has anything crystallized and be a little bit more – is it a little bit more defined now where your preferred position is with Mark Hughes, your manager?
I mean, resigning with Stoke for another 3 years and sitting down with the coach and talking. I think they know where I'd like to play and playing in a defensive midfield role or as a right back. And then as a center back, I think there's three positions that I play consistently on a regular basis with Stoke. And obviously, I like to push more for defensive midfield. And hopefully, I'll get that opportunity this summer. And, you know, that's why I'm pretty excited to get back and to get going with Stoke. I mean, I'll have a full preseason, the first time ever I had an actual full preseason with Stoke. So I'm excited to get back there and challenge for a midfield position if I have to, I'll be a right back as well.
He's Jeff Cameron. Jeff, do you enjoy the preseason trips? I mean, to go to a place like Singapore, obviously the soccer culture in Germany and France. I mean, these have to be great ways to prepare for an upcoming season.
Yeah, you know, I mean, usually I miss out on it, but I get like an extra couple of weeks at home. But I'm actually really excited. I've never been to Singapore, so I'm pretty pumped for that. We'll be there for 11 days, and I'll be there for my birthday. So it'll be pretty cool, special feeling. But the good thing is I'll have another American there. I think we play Everton on that date on the 11th as well. So it'll be funny playing against him. But for me, it's just you get a sense and you get to experience a whole different culture and a new environment. And it's not often where, you know, when you're traveling, you're only in there for a day or two and then you're leaving. You fly in the day before a game and then you play the game and you're leaving. Where we'll be here for 11 days, so we get to, you know, see the culture and see how things are around. And then we head out back to England and then we go to France, be in France for a little bit, and then head back and then go to Germany. So it's cool. It's a great experience and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be tough, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Jeff, let's let you go. I know you got a dinner with some friends. I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for coming on the program. We do appreciate it 100%. We wish you the best of luck at Stoke. Continued success. What a year it was for you, 2014 and 2015.
Always a pleasure, Glenn. Thanks. Anytime, my man.
All right, you're a gentleman. That's Jeff Cameron joining us here. We'll take a break here. Much, much more to come. It's the Best in Soccer Talk.
ESPN. 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
Here on Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, we are global. And we're going right now to Guadalajara, Mexico, where one of the great contributors to this show, Tom Marshall, joins me, a writer for ESPNFC.com. You can catch all his writings over there and has just his finger on the pulse of what goes on with all the Mexican national teams and, of course, Liga MX. Tom, thank you very much for coming on the program.
No, thanks for having me, Glenn. It's always good fun.
All right, well, let's start it off with Copa America. Mexico did not have the best of efforts down there. I know it is somewhat of a split squad. What sort of pressure has come down from the media about that performance in Copa America? And then I would tag that with, must Mexico win the Gold Cup now?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely been intense. I mean, it's, you know, there's been, especially today, I mean, today is actually exactly 1 year since Mexico beat Croatia in the World Cup to advance from the group stage. So, you know, that was a massive victory for Mexico and Miguel Herrera. And 1 year on, there's been a lot of articles in the newspaper today about, one of the headlines was, where's the love gone between Mexico fans and Miguel Herrera? So, yeah, I mean, the Copa America has been a disaster. And I think it's not just the results and the performances, but it's also Miguel Herrera's kind of been saying things and doing things that people haven't really liked. And his popularity now is really at an all-time low.
Yeah, so take me into that a little bit more detailed. What has he done that has sort of irked the fans? Is it team selection? Is it player selection? Is it the tactical setup, the use of individuals? And why is the shine off Herrera so much now? Is it purely based on results?
I think, obviously, results are a massive factor, but I honestly think it's more off-the-field incidents. Like, he sent a tweet out before one of the preparation games against Brazil, which was basically urging people to support one of the political parties down here. And, you know, a lot of people really didn't like that. They didn't like the fact he was, you know, on a game day, giving his own opinions via his Twitter account on a political issue. And then, you know, he's doing all these commercials that I think people are sick of now. When Mexico have lost, he tends to blame the referee. I mean, it's just something that's almost a guarantee that he's going to blame the referee if Mexico lose. And, you know, on Saturday, there was a press conference, and he almost seemed like he was calling out one of the TV commentators down here for a fight. I mean, what he said was, like, he almost called him out and, like, say, oh, right, when I see you, you know, we're going to sort this issue out. Now, you know, he later said, you know, he's going to discuss it, but he really came across like he wanted to have a fight with him, which is a bit ridiculous, to be honest. So, yeah, I think it's more off-the-field stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think he's in fighting shape right now. He'd need a couple weeks in the gym before he, you know, maybe Freddie Roach needs to take him in there and shape him up a little bit before he decides to pick fights with people. But is it an ego now coming out here? Because, look, this guy was beloved and probably still is beloved in many ways. Beyond belief, do you think this is ego? Because I got to think anybody in the public eye who's going to become political, number one, is crazy. Number two, he does seem to enjoy the limelight because he is a great character, and I don't think there's any question about that. But, boy, when you're managing a football team and your players are watching you do all this stuff publicly, I can't see that how that can behoove him.
It has been poor from him. And I say that because he's made mistakes, for example, the political tweet. And then instead of kind of being like, right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it. I'm going to stop now. I'm just going to focus on the field things. Because at the end of the day, he's not been that bad on the field. The results haven't been that bad. I mean, Copa America, yeah, but he was a definite B squad. With his A squad, he's not been as terrible as it seems from if you read the press down here. But I think he doesn't know when to stop. And I think he's all good with the press when kind of everyone's praising him, but he can't take criticism. And that goes back to when he was America coach and Atlantic coach. He doesn't like to be criticised. He doesn't know how to deal with it. And then when you project that onto the national team level, it's just a whole new world for him. And at the moment, he just looks really stressed. He looks tired. You know, he's had a lot of travelling down to Chile and then back up now to the US. So, you know, the pressure is really legitimately on now. And there are changes in the federation as well. There's going to be a new president taking over later in the year. So, you know, the Gold Cup is an absolute must now. And that's just not me saying that. That's the federation, Herrera, players, the media, absolutely everybody.
Is it disappointing to you to see this effort in Copa America from Mexico? I mean, I go back to the days of Luis Hernandez and, you know, I think it was the 99 Copa America. I'm trying to remember which one it was where, you know, they went out and shocked Brazil and scored a couple goals early and almost beat Brazil. And, you know, is it just too much for Mexico? Is there enough talent there to produce a good enough squad for Copa America and the Gold Cup? And do you think it's, you know, maybe you should be doing what the U.S. is? I think it's a missed opportunity for the United States not being in the Copa America, getting that sort of competition and experience bank for players. But what's your thought?
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, it's an opportunity to cut your teeth against some of the best in the world. I mean, three of the top five teams in the world, according to the FIFA rankings, are in the Copa America. So, you know, you're playing against the very best teams. I mean, the really disappointing thing for me about this Mexico team was that the average age was over 28 for each of the starting 11s. And I mean, you know, all right, you're going to do badly like Mexico did badly in 2011, but they sent an under-22 team then. So at least those players got experience in the bag. This time around, I think 70 to 80% of the players that Mexico fielded in the Copa America will never ever play again for the national team. So I think not just in terms of like sending your best team there, but also to give youngsters a go down there. I mean, I agree. It's a completely wasted opportunity.
All right, let's move on. And we're talking to Tom Marshall here of ESPN FC in Guadalajara, Mexico. And again, Tom, we truly thank you for all your great contributions to this show. Let's talk about Chicharito. I mean, there's a couple of big things going on with him. Obviously, his participation for the national team. But where do you think his next move is, and where may we see him go?
I mean, it's a difficult one. He's definitely not short of offers. His agents come out and said that you know, from Turkey to the United States to Spain, Germany, Italy, England. I mean, he's basically got offers from everywhere. So, yeah, it's a bit of an unknown. I think that more than ever now, I think that obviously he's 27 years old. It's got to be a move where to a club that he's definitely going to play. I mean, there's no absolute guarantees at that level of club soccer, but, I mean, he has to be a shoo-in. There's no point in going now to Real Madrid. Because I think that if he does, then he's already got the reputation of being a super sub, which he absolutely hates. It's only going to re-emphasise that. And I think that for the national team as well, he's not guaranteed to start the Gold Cup. I mean, Mexico have got four very good strikers. So, you know, he's got work to do there as well. So it's once again a massive summer for Chicharito and so many unknowns.
I sympathise with him. I'm going to tell you why. Because I think he got the Manchester United interest and the Real Madrid interest at the wrong time of his career. But then again, as a young man, when Manchester United comes for you, how do you turn it down? You can't turn it down. And maybe his career is kind of going backwards. He should have been at some more mid-level clubs playing first-team football all the time and then progressed to a Manchester United or a Real Madrid at that point. As opposed to now, you know, he's got to find a deal, like you said, that's going to get him consistent playing time so that he can prove out being the 90-minute man that he wants to be.
No, definitely. I mean, yeah, you do sympathize as well because, I mean, even last summer, it's like, how can you turn down Real Madrid? And I think that when you get to that level as well, I think players, obviously, they have an ego. And I think that he would have thought, and, you know, let's not forget he's won, you know, two Premier League titles, he's played in Champions League final. He would have thought, right, if I can get an early opportunity at Real Madrid, get ahead of Benzema, which I know is a big ask, but, you know, he would have definitely thought that then why can't it be the star? Why can't it be alongside Ronaldo and Gareth Bale? So, I mean, he took the opportunity. It didn't work out, but yeah. I mean, the bottom line now is that unless he wants to be remembered as this kind of super sub figure, and he has to go to a club where he's going to get regular minutes and score some goals, because at the end of the day, and if he, you know, in the space of the next 18 months, he's going to be Mexico's highest ever goal scorer. I think he's only six away from Borghetti at the minute. So, you know, he's closing in on that as well.
Pretty incredible. I want to take you to another player, Marco Fabian, who has always shown so many glimpses of just exciting play. I mean, overhead bicycle kicks. The guy is obviously a talented footballer. Why can't he get to the next level?
It's a huge question. I'm not even sure what's up with him. I think he's a player who needed to leave Mexico, to be honest, earlier, because he needed a change of scenery, he needed a change of, you know, environment, of people who were talking to him, the people who were training him. And yeah, as his career at the minute now, he's 25, going on 26. He's not young anymore. You know, he's still talking about going to Europe, but, you know, at the end of the day, you look at the Copa America, you look at Mexico's B squad, and he played in one of the three games. He came off the bench once. I mean, it's not a great indication of the level he's at. And I think that, at the minute, he's just so inconsistent with his performance. He's so brilliant at times, but just fails to live up to that. And I think that, that's the weakness in his game.
All right, I'm going to take you to the Women's World Cup, because you are on the ground in Mexico. Has there been any interest in the Mexican women's national team in Canada? And does anybody care about Mexican women's football?
Yeah, I think when the World Cup comes around, it is of interest. And I think that, especially this time around, because it went so badly. I mean, Mexico have yet to win a game at the Women's World Cup in the whole history. I think this was the third time they've been in the competition, but this was the competition that Mexico were due to advance from. I mean, they were ranked higher than Colombia, and they failed to beat Colombia. So the reaction now is that Leo Cuellar, who's the head coach, I think he's been around for over 10 years, I think it's 15 years. I mean, he's coming under fire now, and it'll be a big surprise if he continues, because we had Mexico's probably biggest player, Charlene Corral, who came out and said, look, it's time for change, you know. This guy's been good for us, but we now need to move this forward. I mean, you know, other countries are overtaking us, like Colombia and even Costa Rica. So I think this could be it's been a bit of a bad summer for Mexico all around, really, even with the under-20s and the women and then the Copa America. So, I don't know, it's a bit of a bad time for the federation.
Tom, do you get a sense there's a bit of tokenism with the Mexican women's national team? In other words, are they investing in that team? Are they truly investing in it? Because as I look at the Mexican women's national team, it started off first as getting contacts with players in the United States and somehow trying to get people citizenship from the U.S. to play for them. Now there's more native, people that are players that live in Mexico, a part of the team. But has there really been investment from the federation, or is this just, hey, we kind of have to do this because, you know, women's football is growing around the world? And that's not to say the players aren't giving it their all and the coach isn't giving it their all, but is there truly enough investment? And is this a World Cup that could maybe make the Mexican Football Federation take it even more serious?
Yeah, I think there's a league that's going to start up pretty shortly, which will help. But, I mean, it's an amateur league, and I think it's more of a tournament than a proper official league. I mean, I think the way you've got to look at it with Mexico is that Mexican Federation makes a lot of money. I mean, you know, the games in the United States they play, you know, the games in Mexico, the amount of shirts they sell, this federation makes a lot of money, and it's their decision what to do with that money. And I think obviously, you know, whoever's deciding where the money should go isn't giving enough to the female game. And I mean, you know, if you look at it on a kind of societal level as well, I mean, it could have a huge impact if Mexico's women can actually do something at a World Cup. I mean, you know, for the whole of society, it could change perceptions, because Mexico's a country where, you know, the kind of macho culture still kind of pervades. And then I think women's football can have a big role in, you know, not obviously changing it completely, but kind of a role in that helping women's rights, basically.
Yeah, this is a bit of a social issue. I don't think there's any question. I mean, teams like Ecuador that are in this, Colombia. I mean, I look at Colombia, I look at a country like France who, you know, 6 years ago I watched France and I go, wow, these girls have tremendous technique. There are some real similarities with the footballing culture of French now, of France, that is coming through these ladies. And I remember them outplaying the United States, and they get in and around the 18-yard box, and they just did not have the power and strength to produce a goal and beat a goalkeeper like Hope Solo. Fast forward a couple of years, now they've got the physical side of the game, and that gap has been narrowed, and now they've married the two together, and they're difficult. And I saw that with Colombia as well. It's fascinating to see these great soccer-playing nations begin to take the women's game more serious, because you see it morphing before your eyes. And this is where I think the United States has maybe been left behind a little bit, because as fast as other countries have progressed athletically, I don't think we've progressed technically and tactically as fast as we should in order to keep up with that athletic growth from other countries from around the world.
No, I mean, that's it for Mexico in a nutshell. I mean, there's not been that development. I think it doesn't matter where you start off, you know, the level of United States or where Mexico has come from, which is obviously quite a bit behind. But I think the real criticism here is that under Leo Cuellar, there's not been that kind of development. They've not been improving. I mean, still to win a game at the World Cup, I mean, tactically, I think, you know, the criticism that he's not kind of at the cutting edge of... I mean, look at the England manager. You know, he's played a different tactical system every game, you know, and they've made history by going to the quarterfinals. Look at Colombia, who's done, you know, an incredible World Cup. And I think Mexico kind of just like, why aren't we involved in this? And it's going to be fascinating to see if there is a change in the managerial hot seat for the women's team.
All right, last thing. I just want to quickly go to Ronaldinho, then we'll let you go, Tom. And again, thank you very much for coming on the program. All right, so Ronaldinho goes to Querétaro. He kind of puts them on the map. In some ways, I make it a similarity to when David Beckham came here, although I think Beckham's reach was bigger because it was a whole league that he was sort of representing. But in some form or fashion, the star quality of Ronaldinho coming to Querétaro and spending time there, despite the fact that, you know, he didn't have the good training habits and all that, I got to think it maybe has helped this club as far as gaining some exposure and maybe lifting them to a new level of competitive spirit in Liga MX.
Yeah, I think that you can kind of divide it between off the field. Obviously, it's been a massive boom, and I think the president of the club has said, you know, we've just got so, obviously so much more press, so much more interest in our club than we've ever had. And I think on the field it was mixed, to be honest. There was some decent moments, but overall I felt that Ronaldinho wasn't at the level to kind of make the team better. So I'd say it's mixed, but definitely in terms of, you know, putting not just Querétaro, but I think the league as well, because nobody really considered Mexico as the kind of league that someone like Ronaldinho would come to. And now, you know, there's talk that Robinho might be replacing him at Querétaro. And obviously we've seen André Pierre Gignac come into Tigres, and I think, you know, I don't know, I think it's too early to say that the ball is actually rolling, but it might be just like a little turning point here where we're seeing Mexico actually become a place where you know, big-name players and even Europe-based players are kind of looking to with some interest.
Well, Tom, thank you very much. As always, we appreciate you wrapping up our show in style here tonight. You're the best. You're from Guadalajara. You're Tom Marshall. You can catch his writings at ESPN FC. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate it.
And Tom, by the way, is going to be in Houston coming up here, and I owe him a dinner as Mexico will play Honduras coming up here in July. That'll wrap it up tonight. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Also, make sure you get over to Facebook, Soccer Matters. That's where it's all at. And again, we thank all the great sponsors of this show. Thank you, Bud Light, as we say goodnight.
ESPN
97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.